Let's pray.
Lord, we thank you that things are just the way they are this morning. We know, Lord, this every day is an opportunity to put our trust in you. And so we turn to you now, and we rely on you. We ask that you would guide us this morning. Lord, that you would speak to our hearts, and that we would see your ways a little more clearly today, and that we would obey. In Jesus' name.
Amen.
Okay, we are still on forgiveness, and kind of today, you know, we're talking about anger and forgiveness. And today is really built on what we've already looked at. It's not that you can't get anything out of it if you weren't here before, but just to know that there is something else that's needed to really overcome this issue called anger that some people obviously struggle with and some people don't seem to struggle with it, but it's my observation that everybody has an issue with anger. And the thing that we have built on, basically, just if I could just quickly go back, a prerequisite to understanding the issue of anger that we're going to talk about today, is that bigger picture of a real submission to God, of bearing fruit of Christ living his life through you, and the fruit of being able to love others with the love of God. And that is not something we can do, we know, in our own strength. And we looked at a little deeper in that about if we're really going to be able to forgive others in the way that we are called to forgive, then it requires us having God's purposes at the center of our life. It's a whole perspective change. You see, you remember we talked about this, that if we have our purposes at the center of our life, if we're just living for self, then anybody that interferes with us and what we want to do and what we want to accomplish, we're going to automatically run into an issue of forgiveness. And there's going to be some difficulty in forgiving them. Now, we may be able to work through one issue of forgiveness, but as far as that thing of forgiveness will continue to crop up over and over and over until we have a true perspective change and that we are not self-focused, that we are, and that we are not trying to feel our needs and have our needs met through situations, through other people, through hobbies, through having life made perfect, or whatever. And we, you know, we use the example of the cozy corner cafe that Carl and I stopped in, had that breakfast, and it was just a neat place up in the mountains. And but if you try to get more out of it than that, you're going to come away disappointed. And the same goes for everything else, whether it's a relationship. And that saying of the honeymoon's over, you know, when you're in love and then you think that person is going to meet every single need, and then pretty soon you realize that that person can't meet all your needs, and you come away disappointed. And the problem is, it's wrong expectations. We have no person, no thing, no situation fulfills us. You see, God made us in a way that only He can do that. And so, when we are striving after, we can enjoy those things. We certainly enjoy a relationship. We certainly enjoy the cozy corner cafe. We enjoy a hobby. We enjoy going skiing. But when we start living for those things and focusing and trying to get more out of them than they were meant to give us, and then when those things are taken away, because everything is eventually taken away, you lose things. You lose people. You lose your health. You lose your looks. It goes. So, if you've been living for those things, and that's what makes you happy, then you're going to lose that, and you're going to be disappointed. And you're also going to have trouble forgiving along the way, because you're not going to be fulfilled in God. You see, if God is meeting my needs, and my spouse disappoints me in some way, even betrays me, it's not going to destroy me, because my needs are being met in God. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't deal with those things and that I don't confront those things if necessary. But so we're coming off of that foundation to talk about dealing with anger. Anger is not something you can just pull out and isolate and just talk about just anger. There's a lot more that goes with it. So I'll just for that just so you know there's something more. So, anger is an emotion. Can an emotion be a sin? Our culture would tell us an emotion is not a sin. Now, if you do something wrong, you go beat somebody up. Now, yeah, that might be a sin. But is the emotion itself? What? Not just in the ring list. Or for certain.
That's right.
We'll talk about that. Is an emotion a sin? Our culture would say no, that an emotion is something that happens to you. So consider that as we work through this. And again, consider our foundation. Even if you didn't, if you weren't here to get all of that, just you can get it on tape. But there's something more to it than just what we're saying here today. So let's go to some verses here. Now, what I want us to do, it's going to take us 2 weeks to cover this particular thing of anger. I wanted to get it all done in 1 week, and I wanted to give you some helpful steps to work through if you have a problem with anger, but it doesn't fit in one time. So we'll get it in two lessons, and it'll be the week after Matt's here. So today, what I'd really like for us to get an understanding of is what is anger? You know, how can I identify it in myself? How can I identify if it's a righteous or an unrighteous anger? So let's go. We'll look at a few verses just to get a glimpse. Galatians 5:17. For the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature. They are in conflict with one another, so that you do not do what you want. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. The acts of the sinful nature are obvious: sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, adultery, witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, envy, and it goes on. Let's go to another verse here. So remember that. A fruit of the old nature, that nature that tends to go away from God, that thing that we all have, unless we are submitted to God, that will bear the fruit of the old nature. One of the fruit of the old nature is anger. It's rage. Let's go to Colossians 3:8. But now you must rid yourself of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. And then Ecclesiastes 7:9. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. That it's not saying that every time somebody's angry that person is a fool, but that is a characteristic of fools, those that are quick-tempered, those that get angry quickly. That anger is one of those characteristics of a fool. So anger, to kind of narrow it down, is an emotion, I would say a strong emotion, of displeasure, that something displeases you. Now, that in itself is not wrong. God has anger. There are things that displease God and that make Him angry. And with us, there are things that but with us, there are times that there are things that displease God, and those same things displease us, and those things make us angry. But usually with us, it's really a fruit of our old nature. When something displeases what our self wants and desires, and something comes between that and us. And many things displease us on a daily basis, if you think about it. Things just not working out right. You know, things just, you know, you have the days when things just don't work out right, and it displeases you. It makes you mad. Stuff breaking, you know, the car breaks down again, and it makes you mad. People not doing right, you know, people not acting and doing right. Your spouse, your kids, co-workers, drivers on the road, your supervisor. At some point, we become highly displeased. We are angry. Now, there should have been a red flag of irritation. We were irritated. That irritation grew into anger. Our emotion is something's got to be corrected.
Something's got to be corrected. You know, that guy's got to be run off the road, or that boss has to be told off, or something. Something. Kid needs to be jerked around. Something needs to be corrected. That's our emotion. Anger is a destroyer of the event, the thing, the person that displeases us. Think of this. When you're angry, think of your words. They generally go to sarcasm. You get sarcastic when you're speaking to another person and you're angry. That word, sarcasm, means to rip the flesh, to tear up. You're tearing them up with sarcasm. You're destroying. So think of something that, if you've ever seen anybody working on something and it's not coming along like they wanted to, and they get mad and they just break it. You know, they start breaking stuff, throwing stuff. That goes back to the very base nature of anger. It is a destroyer. And it's breaking, hitting, it even destroys the insides of a person. If you can let it out and destroy people around you, you can keep it in, and you can destroy yourself. So, when we talk about anger, it's not just a matter of controlling your anger. It goes a little deeper, and we'll get to that. So, what is this, understanding this thing of anger, a little bit of what it is and where it comes from, what does this say about venting? You know, going off on something or somebody. Angry venting. Now, this takes some discernment, but you have to know, is this person working through a legitimate hurt, or is this a habitual thing? That somebody is angry at something or somebody continually. It's a habit. Their anger is a habit. If it is, then we certainly are not doing them any favor by allowing them to vent without addressing the situation. Or if we ourselves tend towards this, then it's not just a matter of being quiet and not venting. You see, you know, like the old solution to anger, you know, you get a heavy bag and hang it out in the garage and you go beat on it to take out your anger. Well, that's not really a solution to the anger. I mean, that's better than some other thing you could do, but that's not a solution to the anger. And like I said, this destruction element of anger applies to either the blow-up or the clam-up type of person. Both are destructive. Remember, anger is associated with a fool. So, a little introduction to anger. What about righteous anger? You hear that term. Well, it was a righteous anger. What is righteous anger? According to the Bible, we'll stick to the definition of the Bible. And actually, we'll look at an example quickly. We won't go to this verse right now, but you remember the story of Jesus when he was in Jerusalem, and he goes into the temple, and there in the temple were all these booths set up, and there were all kinds of animals running around and stuff. And what these guys were doing, people had to travel to come to the temple, make their sacrifices at the temple. These guys were, they saw a business opportunity. So they're going to sell these animals for sacrifices to these people that are traveling through. They're going to take advantage of the situation. There's nothing wrong with business, but you see, they were doing it in God's name. They were doing it in the wrong setting. And they were taking the God's house, which was meant for worship, and they were turning it into a thing to take advantage of other people for extortion. So, what did Jesus do? You see, that displeased God, that extortion of people, that using what he intended for worship and to bring glory to his name, that displeased God, that displeased Jesus. He was angry. You read the story. There's no getting around it. He was mad. He went in. He started turning the tables over, just kicking them out. They were afraid. He threw them out of the temple. He destroyed their business. It still had that element of destruction, but it was a righteous anger. It was in line with the nature and the character of God, of course, since Jesus is God. So, anger
can be righteous when it's aimed at the same things that displease God. Or if it's anger about God's reputation or God's rights, if you would. But by far, most anger is over a concern for our own self-interest. Now, this is a gradual understanding of this. And I know that. But you see, this perspective change, that when you have God and the Holy Spirit living in you, and you are submitting to Him, and He's changing your whole concept and perception of how you live and what your purpose in life is, it starts taking care of that self-focus, that self-issue. So, mostly, anger has more to do with our own self-interest. And it even may be related to God's work. Just because it's about some preacher or somebody doing God's work, he could just have ambition in that. And as soon as you step in his path, he'll run you over like anybody else. Self-interest. You have to, there's a difference there than just doing God's work or really having God's interest, God's perspective at heart. But even a righteous anger is to be dealt with by the end of the day. What that means is, you know, something that Paul had a disdain for, that he got angry at in the New Testament, was when a person in the body, in the church, was divisive and started ripping apart the church, causing division in the church. Paul would deal with that, and he dealt with it forcibly. He didn't put up with it. He was angry. But even a righteous anger, we're told in Ephesians 4:6, it says, in your anger, do not sin. It's possible to be angry and not sin. In your anger, do not sin, but do not let the sun go down while you are angry. Deal with it before the end of the day, before the day is done. Do not carry it with you for tomorrow, even if it's a righteous anger that we talked about. And I would say that a righteous anger is a rarity. So the solution to anger is not controlling it. Rather, it's getting a whole perspective change. And just as a note, a reminder, this type of thing you cannot do in your own strength. It requires a dependence on God to have that kind of perspective change. Getting God's perspective on what pleases Him and not self. To which there is obviously a mental and a spiritual element to this. The mental element is that you're in the Word, you study the Word, you get the Word in your mind, in your heart, it changes gradually your patterns of thinking. Romans 12:2 refers to that. But there's also getting in line with what the Spirit desires. That means that I submit my will and I live fully for God. And as I submit myself to Him, I just start, something strange starts to happen. I start to desire what He desires. I start to love others with His love. I start to care about their eternal. I start to care if they're living for God or not. Not in a pressured way, but in the same way that God cares. That each person is conformed to the image of Christ. So it changes your whole perspective. So, what's behind anger? What's the heart of it, if you would? The heart of the issue. So, Dad's been working all day. It's been a busy and a hectic day. He comes home. Man, he didn't want to talk to anybody. He deserved it. He has been stressed out. It's been tough. A rough day. He deserves this. He just wants to grab the paper on his way in the door. He wants to sit in the easy chair and just read the paper. He doesn't want to be bothered. That's his right. He's earned money for the family. He's going to sit down. He sits down. He gets his paper out. He kicks back. Takes a deep breath. Starts reading. States. Here comes crashing through the front of the paper. Is his 5-year-old son. Crashing in. And Dad explodes. He gets mad. He wants to teach son. You don't treat people like that. But really, what his perspective is that his rights have been infringed upon. Now, does he have a right to correct the son for doing that? Well, of course. Because you need to be considerate of others. You know, you need to take others' feelings and emotions into account. So yeah, he needs to stop and teach his son that. But you see, the anger element thrown in there That comes from somebody across his self-desire. What he had a right to, and what he was going to do, and what he wanted. That's where the anger came from. Because the issue still could have been dealt with from God's perspective. Yeah, he needed to be corrected. And maybe Dad to show him needed to sit there and go ahead and finish reading the paper and then play with him. But there's a whole different heart issue going on here. So, you need to take that little example, though, and apply it to your own situation. You know, it's not just about kids. It's about spouses. It's about work. It's about everything. And be sure not to rationalize your own anger. But let's look at an example here. We're going to look at an example of Moses. And there are many times in the scripture where Moses, it's recorded that Moses got angry. In fact, Moses at times seemed like a pretty fiery guy. There's one time with Pharaoh, he said, tell you what, Pharaoh, you're going to pay for this. You have crossed God, and you're going to pay for this. And Moses turned and said he was hot with anger, and he left the room, left him standing there. Moses, nobody dared to challenge Pharaoh, king of all Egypt. And he left. He was hot with anger. God didn't correct him for that. But we're going to look at a time where Moses showed his anger, and God corrected him for it, because it was sin in this time. So we'll try to get a feel for what was different. Only this once was Moses told that his anger was sin. And it's kind of a different sort of situation. Numbers 20. So, Old Testament, Genesis, Leviticus, Numbers. Numbers 20, verse 1. So, bear with me. Let's read through this. Look for this. Here's three emotions. You have to kind of search for this. There's three emotions that Moses had to deal with this situation. Remember, the people that are coming at Moses are wrong. Okay? Moses is the rightful leader. These people that are murmuring and complaining and coming at Moses, they're wrong. Their attitude is wrong. Everything about it is wrong. But God corrects Moses in his response. Look for these emotions in Moses. He's hurt. He's frustrated. And he's afraid. Now, he's afraid because one time before they did this, they were going to stone him. He's hurt. He's frustrated. And he's afraid. And what you'll see, those emotions, anger proceeds out of those emotions. Most of the time, unless it stops, anger will come out of those emotions. He's hurt, he's frustrated, and he's afraid. If you'll bear with me, I think I'll go ahead and read. I'll read all this so you can get the story. In the first month, the whole Israelite community arrived in the desert of Zin, and they stayed at Kadesh. There Miriam died and was buried. There was no water for the community, and the people gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron. Aaron was Moses' brother. They quarreled with Moses and said, if only we had died when our brothers fell dead before the Lord. Why did you bring the Lord's community into this desert, that we and our livestock should die here? Why did you bring us out of Egypt to this terrible place? It has no grain or figs or grapevines or pomegranates, and there is no water to drink. Moses and Aaron went from the assembly to the entrance to the tent of meeting and fell face down, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. He's doing good so far. The Lord said to Moses, take the staff, and you and your brother Aaron, gather the assembly together, speak to that rock before their eyes, and it will pour out its water. You will bring out water out of the rock for the community so they and their livestock can drink. So Moses took the staff from the Lord's presence, just as he had commanded. He and Aaron gathered the assembly together, and in front of the rock, Moses said to them, Moses wasn't really supposed to speak to them this time around. You'll notice when this happened one time before, Moses spoke to God in this very same situation, years before. Moses turned and said, oh God, what am I going to do with these people that are rebelling, they're turning against you? And God said, I'll fix it. But this time, Moses took the matter into his own hands. And this is what he said to them. Listen, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock? Then Moses raised his arm. What did God tell him to do? Speak to the rock. He didn't tell him to smack it. He took his stick and he hit the rock. Moses was mad. He was angry. Moses struck the rock twice with his staff. Water gushed out, and the community and their lives got drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not trust me, you did not trust in me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, you will not bring this community into the land I give them. These were the waters of Meribah, where Israelites quarreled with the Lord, and where he showed himself holy among them. All these things, these emotions that we talked about with Moses, they led him to an unrighteous anger. Now, it didn't have to become sin. Those emotions did not have to turn into anger and sin. Could have had all those emotions, and he could have turned to God with it and said, God, help me. Help me, strengthen me to get through this. But instead, he became highly displeased. He became angry, and it was sin. And the one reason I like this example is because it would have been easier if the people were, the people were wrong. They were wrong. It seems like Moses has a right here. I'm sure he felt like he had a right here because they were wrong. But with these three ingredients that were going on with Moses, the stage was set for anger. But behind those emotions, we took anger back to frustration, hurt, and fear. I hope you're running some things through your mind. If you've ever been hurt, first you're hurt, then you're mad. You're frustrated, then you're mad. You're fearful, but then you're mad. You see, but you take those emotions, and let's go back. What's behind the anger for Moses here? There was something bigger, and God went right to the heart of the matter. He said, you did not trust me. You did not trust me. You know, this thing, just well, this practical thing that I could think of is somebody does something to you, or something breaks, and you get angry at that. You see, that anger in and of itself is a lack of trusting in God that He's sovereign. He can handle the situation. He can get you through it. But you see, you leave God out of the picture, and you've got to handle it. You leave God out of the picture, and you start with that force of anger. But God says here, you did not trust me. Don't you believe? This is my paraphrase here, okay? Don't you believe that I saw this coming? You think this caught me off guard that these guys were murmuring and complaining about the water, Moses? I knew this was coming. I knew you were going to face this. Don't you believe I'm involved in everything you do? Don't you believe I can use this for your good? If you trust me in this, and this will build your faith, and you'll know me more. I'll reveal myself wholly to you. You'll see. You see, think back if Moses would have trusted God, and he would have seen the holiness of God and how God responded to these people. You see the connection to God he would have had, the joy that he would have had in trusting in God rather than trusting in himself. Don't you believe I am sovereign? Instead of showing these people my character, you showed them your selfish anger, your outburst of emotion. I intended this for your good and for my glory. All they saw was your selfish focus and your outburst. Let's look at another verse where Moses responded a little better. Exodus 17:2. Same type of situation. So they quarreled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. Moses replied, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test? You see, Moses didn't take it personal here. They were doubting God, not Moses. They were just taking it out on Moses. And Moses saying, why are you testing God? You don't have a quarrel with me. God's your provider. And then he turns to God a little later. Then Moses cried out to the Lord, what am I to do with these people? You see, it was still an emotional event. It was still a difficult time. But you see, Moses left God out of it. This next time around. The first time, he kept God in the picture. It was still a struggle. It was still hard. It was still emotional. But he turned to God and cried out to God. And God gave him what he needed to get through it. Moses, like I said, Moses had been angry quite a few times before. But every time, it seems to have been righteous anger. And it was righteous anger because Moses, it says, Moses was the most humble man that ever lived. Moses was a humble man. What that means is, not that Moses walked around like this. Moses was a man. You know, he's leading over a million people. He's standing up to them. They're making threats. He was a man. But he was a humble man because he depended on God. And what you'll see is, you see, Moses, most of the time, he was not trying to force his own will. On Saturday, REI had this garage sale thing. And I heard about this about a month before. I thought, you know, I miss this every year. And they have, I hear about all these great deals. People, you know, you get snowshoes for $10. You get, everything's just cheap, you know. I like to have that stuff, but I don't like to spend a lot of money on it. So, I miss it. Every year I'm doing something. This year, I said, I'm not planning anything on this Saturday. All you guys have this garage sale. What they do, you know, people turn stuff in, has one little stitch broken, you know, and then it's a third of the price. And so there's all this stuff that has been turned in for the whole year. And so I had it in my mind that I'm going to go to this garage sale. At some point, I switched to, I'm going to that garage sale. You know, I'm going to ignore things that need to be done or whatever, but I'm going to go to the garage sale. And so, you can see, now, Lori was very kind about this, and she didn't get in my way. She let me do it without interfering. But you know, if she would interfere, she'd say, no, why don't you stay home with me and Caleb, or why don't we go out and eat breakfast, or why don't we just have a morning at home? You see, I would have said, now, you know I was going to that. You've been knowing I'm going to that. I've been planning on this. This is my right to do this. That would have been my response. That was the mode I was in, because I was going. I could feel it. Right down here, you know? When you're going to do something, you're going to do it. Nobody's going to stop you. You're going to do it. But it is it's not a thing of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to obey God, I'm determined to go with God, I'm going to trust Him. That's not what I'm talking about. This is meeting your own selfish need, regardless of someone else. So, to meet that need, it was with force. Rather than, and that's the way Moses was, that's the way he was feeling, I think, in this sense. Rather than in humility and meekness and depending on God and trusting God to guide you in God's purposes. There's a whole different mindset. Let's look at a few other examples. I'll just run through these. You won't go through these verses. What was the rest of the story? Oh, the rest of the story was, I got down there and there's a huge crowd of people there. And they let you go in, they call out, you get these numbers, they let you go in just a few people at a time, but it's this room about half the size of this, and there must have been, it was just packed, and I mean, just, you know, there's, and everybody had the same attitude I had. Only they were much better shoppers than me, you know, going through stuff, you know. Man, I just, this is for the birds. I just left. I didn't get anything. So I spent my whole morning, I planned a month on doing, and I went down there and I was just frustrated. I didn't get anything. And I went back home, and then I hadn't had quiet times. I slept in, and God, it was like, I wasted the morning. So there, that's the rest of the story. Thank you. But you see what happens now. Even after I was already done and coming home, if somebody would have said something to me or gotten my way, I'd have gotten mad. Because I was in myself. I was looking out for my own needs, what I wanted. I know y'all never done that. A few other examples. Old Balaam. Do y'all remember Balaam? The prophet. Now, there was a king that was going to hire Balaam the prophet to come and prophesy some bad things about Israel. Israel, he wanted to go to war against Israel. And he wanted to be prophesied that he's going to win the war. He figured if he gets Balaam to say he's going to win, he'll win. So he offers Balaam. See, this is a big, powerful country. Balaam's going to get some prestige. He's going to get some money. All of a sudden, he's not a prophet for God. He's going for his own selfish desires. He's headed to this king to prophesy to this king. But on the way, he's riding his donkey. His donkey stops on the trail. He's not going anywhere. And Daniel starts beating the donkey. This is his donkey. He's been riding for years and years and years, always been a good servant to him. But here the donkey stops. Never done this before. He gets out of his stick. He starts wailing on the donkey. Now what was going on was there was an angel standing in front of the donkey that Balaam couldn't see. And he was stopping Balaam from going and doing the wrong thing. But you see, he was had that feeling in his gut. He's going to do what he wants to do. And the donkey got in his way. And he starts beating him and wailing on him. Now the story goes, the donkey starts talking to Balaam. God put words in his mouth. And he's saying, why are you hitting me, Balaam? And Balaam is talking right back to the donkey. Well, you know, because he doesn't even notice. He doesn't even notice. This donkey is talking. You know why he didn't notice? You don't see things right when you're mad. You get a skewed perspective. You've heard that. He's so mad he can't see straight. Well, he's so mad he changed it. He wasn't seeing things the truth. When you're that angry, you don't see the truth. You just see out of your eyes. You can't see things from the whole perspective. And here he is beating on this donkey. Donkey's talking to him. He's talking back to the donkey. He doesn't even notice. He's so mad he doesn't even notice. Our second example. You see what happened was, Balaam was thwarted. He was stopped from satisfying the desire of the old nature. You want to get somebody mad, get in their way. Or do you want to get mad, let somebody get in your way. That should be a sign. When you're angry, is that because you're satisfying God's purposes? Or is it because you're satisfying your own desires of the flesh and somebody got in your way? They slowed you down or they stopped you. Balaam was thwarted from satisfying the flesh. And that's why he got mad. It's common. It's a common thing. It helps us identify sinful anger. Story of Saul. Remember, David and Jonathan were good buddies in there. And Saul, the king, was after David to hurt him. And so they're having this big dinner. And Jonathan's there, and the king asks, where's David? You see, he wanted to do harm to David. He was intent on this plan. Jonathan said, David's not here. He has something else to do. The king freaks out. He gets angry. He starts lambasting. And it's because his plan got thwarted. His selfish to fulfill what he wanted. There's another one. King Asa from 2 Chronicles. The king, from his palace, he could look down and he could see this beautiful vineyard. He said, that ground is fertile. Look at that. That would be a great place to put my vegetable garden. And I can grow all the vegetables from my palace right there. It'll be convenient. I know that guy will sell. I'll just offer him some fantastic price. And he goes down and he says, hey, look, buddy, I'll give you triple the market value for that vineyard. What do you say? The guy says, what are you talking about? This is my family land. You think I'm going to... This is our inheritance. I'm passing on to my children. The guy had honor. And he had character. He says, no. He stood up to the king. I'm not selling my land. Well, the king... What do you think his response is? You know, I say, well, he got mad. He took the land. Well, not right off the bat. He got depressed. Depression, a lot of times, is a result of anger. Because really what it was, he was mad. And that was his own personal response in his anger. Now his wife is good. His wife said, what are you doing running around here depressed? You're the king. Take the land. Ended up that's what he did. He just took it. But really, his anger came out as depression. We all know the story of Cain. I know I'm just blasting you with this stuff. I want you to get this, like we like to do, give you this flavor, a little bit of a flavor for what anger is. And to learn how to recognize it in yourself and recognize the source of anger. You know what happened to Cain? Cain and Abel offered sacrifices to God. Abel's sacrifice was accepted. Cain's sacrifice was rejected by God. The righteousness of Cain and the truth of Cain angered. I'm sorry, the righteousness of Abel and the truth of Abel. The righteousness, because Abel was righteous, that angered Cain. It made him mad. But you know, Cain's first response was, he was depressed. It said his face was downcast. And God came to him, why are you downcast? He was angry. He didn't say anything. But you know who he was angry at here? It's Cain was angry at God. That sounds ridiculous, but we all probably have experienced this at some point or another. Things just don't work out, they don't work out, they don't work out, they don't work out. Sovereign God, I know you could stop this. Why are you letting this happen to me? Look, you have crossed the line. It is never appropriate to be angry at God. Because God does everything. Everything He does, we know from the Bible, is just. He is a loving and righteous God. Our perspective is disputed. It's never right. Never, never, never right. But God, I lost a baby. You could have stopped that child from dying. It's never right to be angry with God. It's never right. But it's never right to not admit you're angry with God. If you're angry with God, He wants you to admit it to Him. And say, God, I have no right, but I'm mad. And I'm mad at you. That's the first step to getting over it. You acknowledge to God you're angry with Him because this happened in your past or that happened. And you just acknowledge it. You say, God, I know I'm wrong, but this is how I feel about it. This is my emotion. I know it's wrong. God will then help you take the next step to repent and acknowledge your sin. And then you turn and follow Him. So, if that is something, if you are angry with God, if you ever get angry with God, your best bet is to tell God you're angry with Him. And He'll help you get through it. So, back to Moses. We're almost ready to wrap up here. I know we're got stressed out. Moses, remember, was a humble man. One of the secrets to Moses' humility was that he had a passion for God. You remember we talked about that last week? Moses had a passion for God. He lived for God's purposes. He had had a perspective change. There was a joy about Moses. There was a joy about him. Because he wasn't looking to the Israelites to fill his need. He wasn't looking to having the finest tent in the desert to fill his need. He was you read through. Moses was a joyful man. He had a passion for God. Go and read Exodus 33, chapter verse 12 on. And you'll get to Moses' heart and why Moses was able to respond almost all the time in a right way. His desire was for God, to know God. That's a powerful chapter. But this time, Moses wasn't alert to that frustration that was creeping in. The frustration, the hurt, and the fear that was anger on the way. He was self-focused and he was people-focused rather than God-focused. And this revealed his lack of faith. You see? He was focused on them, what they were doing. He was focused on his terrible circumstances rather than to be focused on God. And that's why God said, your problem is not anger, your problem is a lack of faith. Your anger showing that you don't trust me in this situation. You don't believe I have it under control. You see what God likes to do? He likes to see. He doesn't toy with us. But if we're in a bad situation, He wants to see. What's important to see? This situation is difficult for Him. What's important though? Let's see what's important to Him. Will He continue to love me with all His heart and serve me? Continue to obey me? No matter what it looks like? Then I'll know if He really loves me. If things are going great and he's having success, yeah, of course he's going to act like he loves me. But if things are rough, I'll still be his heart. Will I still be his passion? We'll see. We'll see if he loves me with his whole heart, no matter what things look like. That's faith. That's faith. And that's what pleases God the most. It's not how much you do, or how much you accomplish, but will you put your trust in God today? Will you trust Him today? You see, that takes care of the anger problem most of the time. And I'll just read this quote here. It's half of a quote. I couldn't decide if I was going to put it all in. It's from Norman Grubb. Force is man's human spirit putting forth its little energies in mental, physical, to attain its end. Meekness or humility is God's spirit reigning in the man who first dies to all self-attitudes and activities. The next time we talk about anger, I really wanted to get to it today, but we will we'll talk a little bit about these emerging emotions that you can have in a situation of frustration, of hurt, of fear, And how does God expect us to deal with those things so it doesn't take the next step and go to anger? Or if it already has, how do you back it up and have faith in God?